Sustainable sobriety is here. You can create predictable and consistent results in your alcohol-free journey without abstaining from alcohol the entire time. I always say that taking your last sip of alcohol isn't necessarily always the first step for success. You want to eliminate your desire for alcohol, not just simply not drink. Keep the needle moving forward in your journey, in your transformation, no matter if you do drink or you don't drink. The trap of stopping and starting in moderation is really what always keeps you stuck, but you can embrace an opportunity to move forward without the burden of counting days, and it is all available to you in the Sustainable Sobriety course on my website. Follow the link. I will see you there and I will walk you through step by step. This is the most affordable and efficient way to get from where you are to where you want to go, where the desire to drink truly is a thing of the past. I will see you there.
Wagstaff. I am a life coach who ended a 20-year relationship with alcohol without labels, counting days, or ever making excuses. In this podcast, we will explore my revolutionary approach to quitting alcohol that breaks all the rules, amazing stories from women who are throwing a better party because of it, and how you can stop drinking and start living. This show is not a substitute for rehabilitation, medical treatment, or advice, so please talk to a health professional if your alcohol consumption is a risk to your mental or physical health. Now on with the show. Hello, my beautiful listeners. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really just loving the weather. I know it's the end of summer already, so enjoy these last few days. Take yourself out and just enjoy the natural world and the warmth on your skin and, you know, being in your summer clothes. And that's one of my favorite things about summer. And so I just wanted to preface this interview with, don't miss it, first of all, because it is the next level that we're taking this show into, embodied living. And how it really, really is the subtleties of life where the magic lives and that we're missing out on. So Freedom Civarello, thank you so much for being on the show. She offers her deep, deep wisdom of alchemy, you know, the inner elements and using the outer elements and the inner elements together to create alignment, to really create magic in our lives, to create the shift that we most want to see in ourselves. And when we are consuming alcohol, it's really impossible to tap into subtlety in a way that's going to have a really, really big shift. And so it's saying yes to that. And that's what happens through coaching, is we can start to see the thoughts that are limiting you, but we can start to also open you up to possibilities of the things outside of just the thinking mind that human beings don't really have access to seeing, that they need to experience more. But we know of the integrated whole that we live in, right? That we are not separate from our natural world, and that everything in nature is here to support us. And from the framework of abundance, that the earth is innately abundant, we can choose to be in that mindset rather than in the scarcity mindset that is a construct created by humans. It doesn't actually exist in the earth itself. And so I would love for you to take this last week of summer and just breathe into the abundance around you. One of the thoughts that I've been working with is that as long as my basic needs are met and I am safe, everything else is a bonus. As long as my basic needs are met and I am safe, everything else is a bonus. And it really just shifts that to that the power of the present, where in this moment, everything's okay. And I can choose to respond with grace to the next moment that might confront an emotion that, you know, takes my inner elements to a different place, right? Takes my inner elements a little bit out of alignment. And Freedom expresses this like no one else. She is a master of words and she guides us through an embodiment practice. So make sure you're in a safe place for that. I love her. I love you, Freedom. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge. And all of Freedom's information will be in the show notes. So make sure to really reach out to her because I've been working with her, specifically with her programs in Plant Allyship, and it is changing my life in ways that I don't actually logically, I mean, I do know, but it's all this magic that's happening underneath the process. And the plant meets the people where we are lacking. So there's no negative effects. It just comes in like a hug. It just comes in like this little blanket of support. So, and in this interview, we talk about obviously the relationship to alcohol and how plant allyship can really support that. So enjoy. Welcome back, my beautiful listeners. Thank you so much for being here again for another episode of Stop Drinking and Start Living. I am thrilled beyond. It is a very, very special day. And we are actually starting this episode as what I'm calling season two of the embodied living part of really what happens when we transform our relationship with alcohol. So I couldn't be more thrilled to introduce a very special friend and partner queen collaborator, Freedom Civarello. Freedom is an intuitive alchemist. And Freedom, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, queen. Yes. I'm so excited. Thank you so much.
Yes, I would love for you to just begin by telling our audience a little bit about what your daily magic is, which I know encompasses so much. And then if you could kind of explain the idea of intuitive alchemy, because those are big words that I think we all need to live into, but they're not, you know, as mainstream as I think that would be great for everyone. So yeah, let us know what's going on.
Yes, queen. I am an intuitive alchemist. So alchemy is this blanket wisdom. Alchemy is a universal truth, and it pierces through any kind of dissonance around demographic. Mm. Alchemy is present in every single wisdom tradition, and that's initially what had me fascinated with it. Our natural human need to belong can be held very closely with alchemy. And it also serves as like this initial bridge into wisdom traditions. It's not intimidating because the elements are super intuitive. Mm-hmm. So intuitive alchemy is just frequency work, noticing what element is most dominant in yourself and or your environment, and then meeting that element with either its opposite or its cohort so that you can create harmony, balance internally and externally. That's intuitive alchemy.
Beautiful. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's so really nice. Fun.
It sounds like, yeah, I mean, and it really is the piece that I think is missing from so, not just people who have a relationship with alcohol, but from so much of our modern day society is that disharmony, and disconnect from the embodied experience. And so tell us a little bit about how you use that. I mean, how do you work with your clients and share in the world?
Yeah, 100. So the thing about this age that we're in is there is an epidemic of disembodiment. And disembodiment, I believe, is the epidemic of our time in this ascension time, in this 5D transition. And the wisdom traditions that are waking, especially in women, but in all beings, in the feminine, in all beings, there's an opportunity to explore embodiment in this very articulate way. So I believe confusion is what causes disembodiment. And the powers that be, the world as it is at the speed at which it runs, is what causes confusion. So the antidote to overwhelm, because we become overwhelmed when we get confused, is simplicity. So utilizing alchemy, a very simple system, it's five elements. We usually talk about four, and they're applicable in every single situation. They're notable, they're findable, they're holdable, they're feelable. And it gives the person an immediate opportunity to interact through their senses, through their embodied being, with the mystery that's around them. And it gives the person a grounded place to be. From that tether, we can do anything. Mm. When I work with clients, I work with something I call reclaiming your queendom. And this is an inner descent into the wildness within. It's learning how to free your voice via kind of a crash course in what your creative life force is all about. I do this by showcasing the call of Gaia to return to the rhythm of her bestie, La Luna, and articulating the seasonality of our times. So we all have a different season. All the seasons have a different element. And if we can overlay, create a grid by which to understand what's happening, we can essentially add or subtract accordingly and make harmony, like create balance. And that gives us decisiveness, which qualifies confusion. So we become embodied. We know what we want. We also see where it is and how to get there. It's very simple because it cuts through all these sort of inherited reasons about why and why not, that excessive air from the mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And I just, you know, I couldn't think of a more perfect compliment. And this is, you know, this is part of the process of changing your relationship to alcohol, is to start to notice the body's wisdom. I mean, one of the first questions I ask myself was, do I even want this? I mean, when we're in a state of confusion and overwhelm, the question, you know, turns to the action. How can I change this next, but not inward? You know, whenever it's like when everything else outside of you has failed to solve the problem, there's only one way.
Right. Yeah. You're out of things to blame.
Yeah.
The thing about alcohol. Yeah. Alcohol is the element of fire and it's qualified by its opposite, water. So that's, fire also governs anger, and buried anger, unfelt anger, becomes rage. That's why we say raging alcoholics. So that's also why alcoholics become like very damp on the inside. They become very copic, very slow moving, very uninspired, because there's this water fire imbalance. And then the earth element of the body becomes very dense, very dry from the excess heat. And it's especially sketchy because, like, that's also why when we're in this alcohol state, I mean, I've had my play dates with booze in all these different formats. I was a bartender for years. I was a career bartender. I never really drank. I had other things that I would disembody with, but I would witness this alchemical imbalance so clearly, so often. And from this kind of objective observer view, it's really interesting to see how the fire will get imbalanced. There's like anger or there's frustration. And then the attempt to get at the water, the emotions will start to come out. There will be this like, oh, whatever, flow state, nothing matters. And there's like this really interesting thing that happens. Alcohol is one of these things that is, you're so knowledgeable too about it, but it's basically the frequency of alcohol, the resonance of alcohol is toxic. And there's no judgment around, you know, if any of these listeners are in their exploration and they're looking for, you know, more understanding about why they're drinking or how they're drinking or what drinking even is, because that's really where to start, you know. Why am I doing this? Do I even want this? What's really behind this? There's a courageousness that's required to leave the sensation junkie archetype of alcohol, because that's what it does. Like alcohol numbs out or highlights these sensations that we're either encouraging or avoiding. Mm-hmm. And it gives us this like vicarious life. Like we're living in the idea that we're alive, but we don't feel it.
Yeah.
So we don't really remember it. And then that's why people black out. They're not really there. Excessive just burns away. And what I find most interesting about alcohol is that it's so everywhere. It's so common. And I mean, we are in the Pacific Northwest here. And I remember when I moved here and I was like, there's like whiskey at the coffee shop. Like this is really infiltrated into the culture here in this region in particular. So from here, I've witnessed, besides being a bartender, just the everyday sort of nonchalance around what I believe is actually a poison. And again, there's no judgment, but to have a clear channel is to be empowered, especially as women or in the feminine, to be able to be with your intuition authentically and most importantly, in real time. That's where the alchemy is. It's in real time. What happens with alcohol is it takes us into a different timeline. Like we're in this, all the bad memories of before, or all the future hopes that we're making impossible. Like we're anywhere but right here. And it's this kind of thing with fire where it's the element that needs the most attention because fire gets out of control the fastest. Like you could be holding a match and then all of a sudden your house is on fire. Like it's very quick. You're either like in a cozy campfire or you're in a forest fire. Like fire has like an attitude. It is an initiator. And in that sense, you know, coming back from alcoholism or finding yourself in a space where you would say, okay, my relationship with alcohol is unhealthy. What you're essentially saying is also that, like, it is too hot. And you can really simplify it that way because alcohol loves a story. Alcohol loves reasons why. And it's built into our culture. It's honestly, it's literally insane, this idea of like continuous toxicity.
Well, and that's why, you know, I really, it really is about personal empowerment and why my mission isn't to take down the alcohol industry, because when we live in the society that we live in of consumerism, capitalism, patriarchy, you know, there's always going to be something outside of yourself. And I mean, even regardless of that, there's always going to be a threat in the environment. And so, you know, it's the personal embodiment practice and empowerment practice that's going to be the most useful, because it's like, you don't want to spend your time fighting all the things. You just want to be able to discern clearly yes and no, you know, and that's
one of the things I love about what you teach. Is you've really bypassed this idea that alcohol has to be bad.
Yeah.
And instead you've just gone into the person can be inherently good. Exactly. And like, that's the way to cut through it, you know, like not to like what we feed is going to grow. So if we focus on the alcohol is just going to be the thing.
Yeah.
But the alcohol doesn't have the actual, there's no earth element. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have stability. It's a moving target. And that's why it's so hard to escape. It's why it's so entangling.
Right. Well, and you know, and I really, the work that I do with my clients is that I say, you know, I tell them this is the framework for everything else. Like insert
whatever
you want.
Oh my goddess.
You know, I mean, this, this isn't just stop and start here, but if you, if you're solely focused on this is bad and I'm taking this down. And yeah, like we know alcohol is not good for your body. It is a poison. But you know, so we take embodiment back and power back through saying, you know, how do I want to treat this vessel? And what is the intuitive wisdom of my body telling me about this substance? Cause you could put in anything, but if we're just fighting the alcohol industry, then there's going to be the next thing anyway. And so, yeah, it's that discernment piece. One of the things that you said that I really loved, and I think this is so confusing for so many people with alcohol, is that that people kind of get into this quote unquote, like false flow state, when they're drinking. And I think that that's that piece that when people are deciding to change their relationship that they can't see past, it's because it's the only way they've been embodied. is in this
right. kind
of like loosey-goosey, it's this false sense of freedom. And I, you know, and on the other side of it is really, you know, handcuffs.
And so sometimes literally, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. And so I think that that's the piece that people get really hung up on is like, how do I get to that place on my own? And of course it takes time, but, and this might kind of cycle around a little bit to, you know, to plant allyship, and, you know, how you've found, freedom through embodiment with, you know, even, you know, your personal journey, and then how you apply the plants to help people find the freedom through, you know, actual real time embodiment rather than this false sense of freedom.
Yeah, Queen, that's really solid, because it is that false sense of freedom that traps people. Essentially, they become intoxicated by a faux liberation, and they lose sight of what they actually are here for, are capable of, and started out wanting to do. Mm-hmm. Like, people start out having a cocktail or a glass of wine or whatever because they want to have a good time. And then sometimes these other things happen. Sometimes great times happen. Like, I also want to stress, like, I don't believe alcohol is inherently a bad thing. I mean, I make my tinctures with honey liqueur, you know. It's not like it's a bad thing. Like, alcohol can be a facilitator in some ways. However, the level of embodiment that's required to combat that level, that is such an extreme elemental association, you really have to have a handle on all the other three. And most people, this disassociation, it's honestly just easier. Mm-hmm. So my journey started in disassociative behavior. I had an eating disorder for most of my life, for about 28 years. And this is a really long time considering I'm 35 years old. So this started when I was 6, almost 7, and it was a really painful time, but it was my first experience with being able to control my environment, because when we have kind of a chaotic environment, when we're children, trauma in some way, the thing that we can control is what we consume. There's not really a lot else we can control because, you know, we can't drive, we can't leave, we can't really speak with a vocabulary that is impactful. We don't seem to affect our adults enough to make change in our environment, but we can create this faux liberation around freedom by controlling what we consume. So I went into eating disorder land, and it was terrible forever. It was terrible forever. And I kept going back and forth. There's a horrible quote that I heard when I was a teenager, and this might resonate with some of your audience or yourself. You could also apply it to alcohol. But the quote is from Kate Moss, who is a famous model, bless her, in the 90s. And she said, "Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels." And I was like, oh my God, my soul. Because I believed that to be true. And I still, in some ways, see the truth in it. Because what it's really saying is nothing is as great as being in the belonging. Mm-hmm. Like, when you feel like you fit in and you don't have to think about your actions or something, like, there's like this confidence that comes. It's not really yours, though, is the problem. How it interacts with damage is that it's not actually your own. So I went into eating disorder land, and it got really complicated when my father passed away. I was anorexic for most of my life, and then I transitioned into being bulimic. And then I went back and forth between the two. It's actually been researched that anorexia can become bulimia in extreme bouts of grief. And there's energetic correlations there that are really interesting. That is how I came into plant allyship. So I was in this super dark, damp, just excessive disassociation. I didn't really feel or remember anything. And this was like a long time. My father died when I was 21. I also became a bartender that year. And I went on this kind of journey in that transition between 18 and 28, like right before my son had returned, that was really disembodied, like really heavily on the herb. Like I smoked ridiculous amounts of cannabis. Like, girl, it was redonk. Like I would wake up and smoke. Mm-hmm. I would smoke all day. I would go to work, I was smoking. It was like all the things. I worked reggae shows. It was like all the time. And yeah. I mean, it was like real. Yeah. but I didn't feel like I didn't feel bad. Like, you know, so that's what's confusing about dissociative behavior is you're not feeling anything. So you don't actually feel bad, but there's this kind of ache to feel whole that haunts the individual. And I was haunted by this desire. So I looked for, you know, men, I looked for, you know, substances, I looked for experiences, I looked everywhere except inside myself. Right. And then I encountered this woman who introduced me to somatic work, which I teach now, breath work and somatic experiencing, which is embodiment practice, it's profound, and plant allies. She introduced me to geranium essential oil. And geranium is a really powerful ally for grief. Mm-hmm. She works with the liver. So she works with dissolving resentment and anger. It's also a heart tonic, being able to trust. So distrusting ourselves, it's a potent thing in the feminine. It's been a potent thing in the feminine for hundreds of years now, because there were burnings, there were reasons to doubt our own initiative powers, the way that we can initiate movement. That's a sidebar, however. So geranium essential oil, really, I remember she opened the bottle and she handed it to me. And I was like, cool, essential oil, like right on. I've seen this at Whole Foods, you know. And I took a breath of it, and then I used it in a breathwork somatic experiencing practice. And I like went into these tremoring experiences, like completely profound awakening moment from this simple limbic reaction. So essential oils, plant allies, they work on your limbic brain. Your olfactory system is how they enter your limbic brain. That's your sense of smell. Your sense of smell is your deepest form of memory. And the tether to neuropathological change, which is what we have to do when we break disassociative behavior, we have to go into our deep subconscious mind because it's running automatically. We have to stick the spoke, like put a stick in that spoke and disrupt the automation. We do that very effectively with scent and your limbic brain. That's aromatic usage. Mm-hmm. Internal usage, I went into right away because I was so impacted by even just smelling it. The internal usage, essential oils, you know, plants are carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And also you, the individual, the human, is carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. So these are things that are easily assimilated, accepted, and absorbed internally. Essential oils are so small that they pass the blood-brain barrier. They enter the cell wall unobstructed. Mm-hmm. So they can actually impact on a cellular level health. And this is science beyond just the smell. It's mm-hmm. very profound. Anything that you touch in any way touches your skin, comes into your nose, comes into your mouth, anything goes into your bloodstream, it goes into your brain. And it's in that brain place and that blood place that we can actually facilitate change internally. And the internal reflects the external reflects the internal. So as we go for harmony and balance, as we alchemize our experience. And so all the plant allies, they also have different elements. Geranium is a flower, so she's associated with the element of water. And there are all kinds of wisdom traditions that overlay what water means. The frequency of water is memory. So it's no surprise that you can unpack deep-seated resentment from old wounding that you remember with geranium. And that was just my first experience. From there, I went like headfirst into what the fuck are plants? Because I didn't know. I mean, I'm from Hollywood, California. There isn't a lot of natural things, natural behaviors. There's a natural foods industry, but that's different than actual nature. Like other than like Mama Ocean, in Los Angeles proper, there isn't really that celebration. And I mean, you know, we have a birthright to rhythms. So living where there aren't really seasons also confuses about that kind of thing. So geranium was my introduction. And going forth from there, I started to develop essentially a program, what I now call protocols, that I essentially prescribe to people to help them combat what they're working with on a physical level, emotional level, spiritual level, the psycho-spiritual being, the energetic field level. All of the different levels are addressed by the plants because they're assimilated physically, they're understood mentally, and they have a certain like je ne sais quoi about the spirit that can't be contained or explained really. It's just an impact, a resonance, it's a frequency. So aligning oneself with the frequency of the plant allows you to embody the wisdom that that plant carries and facilitate change in your physical life, in your 3D experience. Because we can talk a lot about meditation, which I also teach meditation. We can talk a lot about body practices or things, but it's just talk until there's a feeling. If you don't feel things, you can't change.
Right.
It's impactful.
Yeah, I excuse me. I have been saying, you know, that the tools have been really encouraging people, and I didn't even do this. I mean, conceptually, these ideas are not plant allyship, but even practicing yoga and meditation. Conceptually, you can know them, and even yoga, you can know on your mat and in your body. But until you actually, but that's when you're. You know, you're feeling great, you're excited, you show up, you have the container to hold you. But until you actually need a tool, you know, off of that, the application of it is when it's the most important. And I think that plant allies are so accessible and so useful that, you know, it doesn't, there's such an impact with really a small amount of work and observation.
Yeah. You literally just open a bottle. I mean, and the bottle will fit in your pocket. Like it's not like these other things where you need to completely transition your entire environment. Like it's the opposite. This item will transition your environment.
Yeah. I did want to have you explain something because I feel like some people might not understand the concept of somatic practices and even embodiment in itself. And, you know, talking about the resonance of plant allies and plants having a frequency that resonates with our body chemistry on its as a symbiotic relationship, I think is so foreign to how we are brought up and how we live our lives. And what I like to explain to people is that everyone has had the experience of being in nature and feeling a calmness, or being, you know, at the ocean and experiencing kind of that wonder and awe. And I think that that's a way for people to kind of understand and relate to that. But I would love for you to just kind of even give an example about somatic practices as in terms of embodiment, and then also. Yeah, the experience of plant allyship kind of in our everyday world too.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, there's two ideas. There's one, we can do one if you want to.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, experiential. Yeah, so experiential with somatic is actually really cool. So if you're listening right now and you're, you know, driving or walking around or something and you're not able to take a seat, you can just come back to this practice. But if you are seated or you're in a space where you can kind of close your eyes, we're just start by closing our eyes and taking our hands upward facing somewhere on our legs. And just having this sensation of hands that are skyward facing, and then eyes, if it's comfortable for you, that are closed or are gently looking down, kind of looking at your nose, a slight tuck of the chin. This is a practice called Flower Hand, and I use this almost every day to recalibrate my nervous system and return to my feeling, to my sensation. And so we'll begin just by noticing the reality that we're breathing. We have our breath, it's evidence that we still have time. We have our breath, we have evidence that there is still time. And so we'll take a few breaths here, trying to tap into the feeling physically of your body moving ever so slightly as you're breathing. So you might feel your low belly moving. You might feel your chest rising and falling. You might feel the sides of you expanding. And from here, we'll count down from 10. And we'll go 10, 9, just breathing. Don't worry, you're not being hypnotized. 8, 7, breathing. 6, 5, 4, 3, breathing. 2, and 1, breathing. Maybe finding your awareness in that space behind your eyes, that magic dark behind your eyes. Allow your awareness to descend down your body, down your arms, and into the palms of your hands. And so you bring into your mind the idea of feeling your hands, and then investigate, can I physically feel my hands? Temperature, tension, pressure on the back of my hand and my leg. Breathing and attempting to feel as much as you can both of your hands. And with the eyes closed, you might move the fingers a small bit, just a little, seeing how that changes anything. And then from here, with your next breath in, you'll stretch your hands out, widen the fingers and the thumbs apart from each other, breathing all the way in. And then as you exhale, very gently take the fingers and the thumb together towards the center of your hands. Just like a flower would close and open. Going with your breath, whenever you breathe in, open the hands, some mild effort, stretching the hands all the way open, expansion. And then whenever you exhale, slowly, with feeling, draw the fingers and the thumb together to touching. See if you can feel that moment right before your hands actually touch. Continuing with your breath. Whenever you're inhaling, you're opening, you're expanding. And whenever you exhale, you're drawing it in, connecting, noticing if they're touching at the same time or different. Just like a flower would open and close in the morning and the evening. We'll do one more full round, just noticing if you're holding your breath because you're focused. Sometimes we hold our breath when we concentrate. Letting your hands gently open after your last one, and just letting your hands be open. Noticing any change, sensation in the hand. Noticing if you feel your hands more than you felt before. Taking one more full breath here. And then drawing your hands together. Take your hands towards prayer or just connect the hands. If we had an essential oil practice here, you'd essentially be imprinting your experience with that frequency, with that scent. And any associations with that scent that are made in your meditation or your physical practices can get embodied or absorbed. And depending on the meaning of each ally, the spiritual context, however we absorb it, whatever word we want to use, meaning is kind of a neutral one, we can start to imprint ourselves with the idea. So if I'm working with trust, I would use geranium. If I'm working with truth, I might use frankincense. If I'm working with focus, I might use lemon. If I want to work with the unveiling, I might work with copaiba. And there are so many.
That was amazing and beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm just like, I actually got my geranium out and had a little bit after.
Yes. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, geranium, if you want to, girl, you take some, you put it on your liver right now.
Oh, I love that. So yes, I think for our audience, I mean, I just think for the world, I mean, really, like, I think that is the biggest problem with meditation, is it ends up being like, that was beautiful because it really was about not disassociating from the moment, mm-hmm. but really embodying the moment. And I think more and more from just some research that I've been doing, the concept, I mean, and there have been people talking about this for a long, long time, but the concept of simply finding a relaxed state rather than is just balance and harmony. And that, you know, we can all kind of feel what a cathartic release is like. And then when we add in the plant allyship, and so rather than, you know, getting rid of the thoughts, we can, from a relaxed or balanced state, take that witness perspective to start to just view from this neutral place, like, oh, what's been going on in the depths of the shadows of the subconscious for the last year?
Casual.
So yeah, that was beautiful. Thank you. I love that meditation. I feel like I might have to borrow that one.
Girl, it's one of my favorite practices. I do it sometimes in the grocery store.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just use my hand to breathe, and it's just so soothing because, yeah. You know, we live in a very overwhelming world. I will argue that it is designed to overwhelm. Mm-hmm. There's a benefit for some. Cultural things, if we can't pay attention because we're so overwhelmed and terrified.
Yeah.
So to be able to embody is actually a revolutionary act. to be able to stay neutral and, you know, notice the trigger, be with the trigger and let it pass through us. It's not easy, for sure. It's a practice, but the benefits far outweigh living inside of that fear state. I mean, there's nothing worse than living in fear, and it's normalized. What we learn how to be afraid, we're taught how to be afraid of certain things. And, you know, to unlearn is to reclaim that queendom, whether you be a man or a woman physically. There's an element there of breaking down fear. So important.
Yeah. I'm going to pause us just for 1 second. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, do it.
Right here. So can you talk a little bit about just, you know, how that did start to shift for you when you, you know, you said you had this really profound experience with the geranium and then doing mm-hmm. the somatic practices. And so that practice is about tuning into the sensations of the body. And then, so how did that start to just shift your awareness of the fact of being disembodied?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And it's actually, it's so oddly simple. It's just that your body, my body knows what I need. And if I place myself in a position to hear or to be able to translate its language, I know what I am to do. And my external environment will become what I need it to be. I'll make choices that will manifest externally what I need. And the most interesting thing from being disembodied to being embodied is the interaction with desire. So desire and passion are something that are symptomatic of the waking feminine, the rising feminine, this kind of upward spiral that we're all sort of interacting with right now, especially. And it is such a dynamic sensation. It demands change so sweetly, but directly, that we can't help but take an action. And we know internally, inside of ourselves, we know that actions create change. And change neuropathologically registers as death. Our mind avoids change. It's programmed to do that to keep us safe. So the cross-referencing, the essential oils to put the stick in the spoke of the pattern, and then the practice to facilitate the absorption of the new information, when you overlay those two, you get this ability to change liberated. Like you have a liberation around embodiment because you're not afraid of it anymore. A lot of times, you know, how many times have we avoided putting ourselves in a position where we would have a clear answer? Mm-hmm. Like we say we want the clear answer, but then we get the opportunity to get really clear and we're like, oh, that was cool. Now I know it's there. I can go back there anytime mm-hmm. when it's like more convenient for my current life. We have these opportunities all the time to essentially table flip our life. And what our mind says is, oh man, that's going to create like a huge mess. That's going to be damaged. Everything's going to get ruined. You're going to die. But what God, Goddess, what Source, what Universe is saying, oh no, Queen, this is the way. Because all of the things on the table are blocking you from coming closer to me. And the courage that is innately in the feminine, the resilience that is innately in the feminine, can handle that pressure change. It can. But you have to feel your way through it. The individual has to feel their way through it. And sometimes there's such a backup, a backlog of emotion that it takes a lot of time to break through. And that accidentally confuses the individual into thinking it's not for them. It's not possible. I'm just going to do this instead. I'm going to stay with what works. I'm going to stay with what I know. Whether it be, you know, the devil that you know or the angel, you're still staying with what you know. You're keeping yourself small. And the universe, it's designed to expand. We are expanding all the time. Occasionally, we bump up against our environment, and that's what creates agitation. But somehow, we miss the memo about changing the environment. Instead, we try to change ourselves. We try to stuff ourselves into these smaller places when we are getting bigger every day. And it's very interesting, this whole thing, because embodiment like intersects that. When we accurately feel our feelings, there's no doubt in what's true. Like when we have an intuition, we have a ping, some people call it a ping, about doing something. Oh, call this person. And then our mind comes in with like, oh, you haven't called them in a while. They're going to think you want something. Like last time you talked, it was weird, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you don't do it. And then you find out later, you know, that person just lost someone special to them. Or that person calls you right back, you know, or that person, like there's these, to clear the channel by becoming trusting of sensation facilitates like epic growth, epic connection to the rhythm of the universe. And it's like a little bit tangential, but the embodiment practice is what connects the human to the source because we have a body. It gets confusing with a lot of meditation practices, like you were kind of referencing earlier, because they actually create disembodiment because they create fantasy. Like sometimes visualization is a disembodiment practice, or sometimes people practice disembodiment, like they astral travel, but they don't have an accurate embodiment practice before they go out of body. Or a lot of people, you know, they leapfrog embodiment and they do like ayahuasca. And they do disembody, they go into the spirit realm, but then when they come back, nothing makes sense. You know, so like sometimes people will go into these extremes, either disembodied or hyper-embodied. Like some people are, like I was saying earlier, they're sensation junkies. They have too much feeling. And so they crave disembodiment. But overall, when we are connected to, when we can feel a resonance, our body will remember that. Like we remember the resonance of the womb. When we're out in nature, like you were speaking to nature earlier, when we're out forest bathing, we're out in nature and there's that calm sensation. That's from a chemical, a molecule called alpha-pinene. And alpha-pinene is present in like Douglas fir trees, and Douglas fir essential oil. So we can actually facilitate that state with the plant allies, whether we're out there in them having a physical imprint, or we need that imprint to come to us when we're not in that space. And so the tether right there with the allies, that's where they really become so epic, is that we have access to those frequencies all the time. It's almost like the internet, like the how the internet, you can access anything, a book, a quote, whatever you need to find out, instead of using your mind, it's external. It's like that. The oil is like the feeling inside you that you need to call out, call for, but you need something to initiate it.
Yeah, I want to look up that chemical. I didn't know that. That's amazing. But yeah.
Oh, you're in it too.
I know. I mean, thank goodness.
So awesome.
Thank goodness. It's really been supportive. One of the things I feel like is so challenging for most people, and it was for me, and it could just be timing, that idea that, you know, we only receive what we're ready to receive kind of when we're ready. But is, you know, especially in comparison to alcohol, is that it's sometimes the work seems tedious because of the subtlety, and, but it doesn't have to be. And for me, you know, I've been practicing yoga and mindfulness, quote unquote mindfulness, for 20 years in certain capacities. But when it came time to the deep embodiment and really the divine feminine, I mean, I think that, I mean, you spoke to this, that is one of the biggest disconnects of our power is
the connection
to the divine feminine. And so when I intuitively was like, something's got to give and it needs to be from, you know, I need to go in to find out what the hell is missing. It was really the calling of the divine feminine, and she, and then like the goddess called me home. Everything just fell into place. I mean, every switch flipped and all of my intuition just got super heightened and turned on. And then the subtleties of life became so much more powerful. And I was like, finally could just take a deep breath and relax. But I think getting to that point, there's so much resistance to, you know, how could, if you're like used to raging it, you know, in parties all night or whatever, like how can go, you know, how can like sniffing oils, you know, kind of get me to this place? And it does.
Oh, yeah.
And then you actually feel whole and holy and healthy. So yeah, I mean, do you have any suggestions for people? I mean, besides just, I really comes from, you know, belief, like believing that we are part of this symbiotic world, right?
Yes. Yeah, we are. I do. So I offer actually free half-hour one-on-ones for anyone that would want to explore this idea of like how to connect or how to choose. But there's an interesting parallel to what you're saying right now. And I would compare it for people that are in the alcohol space. It's the same as developing a tolerance. Like we have a tolerance to life. We grow that tolerance the same way we grow the tolerance to alcohol through more experience or more regular use, right? When I drink life more, I get more available to it. Same thing with alcohol. When I drink alcohol more, I mean, we all remember having one cocktail and we were like, okay. And then all of a sudden we can have 10. Right. So for life, people can experience one thing or they can go through a whole day with presence. It does take time. It's the same idea because our body works in the earth rhythm. The earth is not in a fucking hurry. The earth is like, bitch, please, I will take my time. I have these months and these seasons and it's so glorious. I'm like, watch me go, like, watch me change. And we wait for it. We celebrate the peak of summer. We celebrate the depth of winter. We celebrate, you know, the harvest and the new beginnings, the resurrection of the world in the spring. Yeah. And there's a power in understanding that there is not really minute. There's actually only moment. And to facilitate our own timeline, not living our life in minutes. It's moment to moment reality. That's what makes momentum. That's what reality is. And, you know, living like with the oils especially. So what they're doing is they're basically helping you to develop a tolerance to sensation where you don't have it. So there's different oils for different things and there's different elements for different things. And the combination of the two is very individual. That's why I really like working one-on-one with people. It's a deeper dive into what's possible, and every individual's story is so gorgeous and unique. I've also had a very intense life. I've had a lot of intense experiences, and so I have a lot of physical memory of experiences that a lot of people disembody from. And I can speak to the elements in that way that is unique. I'm also positive that they have an effect because of that. And, you know, we all know belief is the first part. So to qualify doubt, we have to have proof. We have to have a physical experience. And the oils are so generous that way because they're simple. So simple. I even just diffusing in a room with a diffuser, you're actually dosing your environment with a vibe. And that vibe is transformative. I will speak to essential oils too, just quickly. I'm very specific about the essential oils that I use because essential oils, plant allies in all different forms, are very trendy. So they're prone to corruption. And I work with a company that is a privately owned company. There are no shareholders. They are able to put people over profits and really give back to Gaia in a way that feels full, abundant, and authentic. I celebrate that for sure. If you are like your audience, if you're curious about essential oils, you really need to vet your sourcing, because most essential oils are actually perfumes, chemical constituents that are designed to mimic plants. And they actually create a detox reaction because they're sort of neurotoxins, which I know is a big word and kind of hard to hear, but it's a sad reality what we do to the earth often in order to mimic more this moreness. Like, you know, like I could buy this essential oil and it's $23. I could buy lavender from Freedom, it'd be $23. Or I could buy lavender from, you know, Marshalls or TJ Maxx and it'd be like $3.
Right.
But I can tell you right now that lavender is actually, you know, I don't want this to be like a, you know, smack talking things, but for medicinal use, you have to go with quality over quantity. It's immeasurably important. And something that I really appreciate about my company is that they have a website called Source to You, where you can actually look up the exact chemical composition of the bottle in your hand. Like no other company does this. And it's really, first of all, it's fascinating because there's different batches that have different amounts, like say of alpha thymine, right? So it's interesting, like, oh, I wonder what, you know, now I have these two or whatever, I can like compare them and it gets really fun. And the regions, you know, plants grow best. What you're looking for with essential oils when you're using them therapeutically is purity and potency. And so for something to be potent, it has to be grown in season. And for something to be pure, it has to be unobstructed. So when we harvest our rose from Bulgaria, we only harvest that rose at the right time when this rose is ready to be harvested. And then we only steam distill the petals. Like we don't put in the rose bush because that would be easier. And risk getting all these other things inside of this precious plant ally. It's pure. And because of that, it's more of an investment because you are only with plants. Like the amount of plants, when people tell me that when they're in scarcity, I'm like, you need essential oils because the mere amount of earth matter that goes into a bottle to make essential oil is profound. Like we don't really have a connection to where things come from in a lot of our modern culture. Like we're like, oh, the grocery store, but it's also the truck and the farm and the person and the freaking seed, right? So like essential oils, you know, you need so much plant matter. There are hundreds of roses. Like there are thousands of roses in the absolute rose. There's hundreds of roses in the rollerball. It's one of my favorite oils to work with is rose. And just something to really put out there, invest in the purity and the potency of your essential oils because you will go faster and farther. Not that we're in a race, but you'll go faster and farther this process. It's really important. There's enough toxic out there. We don't need more, in my opinion.
Well, and it's kind of, you know, the opposite of what we're talking about too, where it's concentrated and it is abundant in the fact of like, there's so much in such a small amount, like one drop has such a profound effect.
Oh my God.
And I can definitely speak to that potency. As far as even feeling like when I go, so I work with Freedom. I buy oils through doTERRA with her, and it's amazing. I mean, I feel like I am going to actually treat my, you know, to a treatment and like a prescription of myself when I, and it's very ritualistic, and it And Freedom has so much knowledge of, you know, prescribing the dose. I mean, she really is this alchemist. And I wanted to, before we go, I want to make sure everyone has your contact info, but I, you know, one of, and when I was kind of reflecting back on this, the idea of the divine feminine and living in cyclical nature and how, you know, in our society, we really don't, we honor the seasons by these, by like holidays, right? These like fake, humor driven, like ways that we celebrate the seasons. And so I've always had a big connection to nature. I spent a lot of time in nature by myself, smoking pot also as a,
I mean, it's a vibe person.
But I mean, you know, at least that was, you know, I guess it's all plants, but I don't know.
There was cannabis, some- cannabis is a plant. And if you're not abusing cannabis, the same as the tincture, same as the honey liqueur in the tincture, that's also alcohol. But there's a, I'm doing it on purpose with purpose.
Well, right. And that's such a small amount too. And I mean, yeah. CBD, as we know, is just a is powerful in the copaiba, the CBD.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. That's another, that's a great thing to talk about. If anyone is working with CBD, I would love to introduce you to copaiba and just talk about the difference between the different kinds of cannabinoid phenols, which is what CBD is.
Yeah,
but keep going, girl.
Well, maybe we can do like a tiny little like article in a newsletter or something about that, because that would be amazing. I would love to send out your info like with this episode with the newsletter too.
Oh, I'd love that.
But is the first way I think of really, and I didn't reflect on this until now, of embodiment of the cycles of the self in relation to the cycles of the earth is through making sure we're close to our own personal monthly cycles in whatever way it shows up. And that was my first, that was the transition point for me actually of starting an embodiment practice in a different way. Cause I could like physically feel my body moving and I could do all the things in yoga or even dance. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the subtle rhythms of the emotions and how they corresponded with my own personal cycle, and then in relation to the seasons, that overlapping, that was when I started to really get that sense of, you know, that innate empowerment of a different type of control that was natural. Like it wasn't control, but it was truth. Right.
Well, what you have there, it's like, yeah, like you don't have control, but you have an embodied awareness that makes you think you have power, which we understand as control.
Right.
So like what you've actually done there is you've triumphed over the idea that you're controlling, and instead you're falling into the reality of influence. We can't control. We can influence.
Yeah.
And we can influence by supporting our cycles. You don't have to be a leader to understand the rhythm of the earth, because we have the moon. Mm-hmm. The moon is the rhythm of the earth. The women, it ties to the moon that have menstruation. But I mean, crone wisdom is the moon.
Yeah.
Maiden wisdom is the moon.
Well, so I just wanted to say too, I mean, we've even, as women in society, we've even been disembodied from that. There's this YouTube commercial right now that is like, drives me crazy every time I see it. And it's like, just talking about how gross periods are and like, oh, like,
you know, that's another thing.
All of these things that are wrong with it. And then, you know, they're selling a product. So I think it's like some kind of like cup, but, or whatever, I don't know, but I'm just like that right there. And we know, you know, in the medical industry and all these things, but that right there is such a disassociative, like that we have been looking at this beautiful cycle that is our empowerment, that is our power place. I mean, as the creators of life.
I mean, we really have to tap into that. Like, here's the thing, because we're two generations deep into this idea now, and almost three generations deep into this idea that menstruation is dirty, mm-hmm. inconvenient, and a problem. And I would just love to talk about someday, maybe with you, maybe one of the episode two, of just the reality that the womb space is the epitome of holy. Mm-hmm. It is a holy, sacred space that should be respected and worshiped, because life comes from it. The blood that comes out of the womb is actual life force.
Yeah.
Has the composition to create another human. That is ridiculous to me. Like the idea that there was a cell that split into two and then became me.
Right.
That the profundity, it's right?
Yeah.
What? Oh, I mean, what is that?
There's stuff, you know, and so that's
amazing.
That to me is a great place to start. I mean, yes, it is a holy place. I would say it is the Holy Grail. But of course those stories have gotten bastardized as well.
Yeah. Whoops.
But here we are talking about it. And so,
yeah, we're bringing it back.
And I am very interested in potency, and I'm hoping everyone calls and talks to you. And
I would love it.
Can get essential oils, DoTerra essential oils, in the hands of all my clients as well. But where
starter kit
good? Like, what would be a good oil to start to connect to the divine feminine essence in that way? With like specifically moon cycle, with or you know. Any way that you show up to identify with that, whether or not you're bleeding, that feminine cycle of the moon inside.
Mm-hmm. 100% clary sage.
Okay.
Yeah, clary sage. Clary sage is also an estrogen mimic for those of you that have thyroid things or are curious about the emotions that happen when your estrogen will drop off in your luteal phase. Clary sage is the oil of the inner visionary, the intuition. And she's really rivaled only by blue lotus, which is like an impossible oil to get pure. Blue lotus tea is the best way to work with blue lotus, unless you get lucky and you get doTERRA has it every, it's like they've never really had it before, they just had it in a Mother's Day kit. So I have this like gold precious glass box little bottle of it. I know Mary has one too. But I think it's like a Mundi or a Nindi. There's like a company out of New York. I'm butchering the name, but they actually have a blue lotus tea. Mm-hmm. And they just came out with a rose powder that I'm living off of. Ooh. So clary sage, yeah, honestly, it's ridiculous. It's in one of my new medicine blends. It's awesome. The clary sage is going to be profound. That is a really good one. If there's trauma, geranium is really good. Like, so you could start, you could do clary sage, and then we could talk about, you know, what exactly you're trying to facilitate. And then you would pair with clary sage something. But if you were just going to have one, clary sage, and then, these one-on-ones, the half hour one-on-ones, it's really where I can really help people look at things, because it's very overwhelming. We have like 200 oils and they're all different. And sometimes I'm like this weird like witch encyclopedia. So I know I can get overwhelming with the amount of information I have. So I like to simplify it for people. And when people work with me, they have, you know, they have access to me. Like I am like their encyclopedia. So you don't have to remember the things. You can just text me. I'm very open that way. Like I run a lot of my things face to face. Like, I mean, well now, or maybe later, depending on when this episode comes out, you know, FaceTime, Zoom, all that, because I work with people all over the world. And, I'm really excited to be able to facilitate this. You can find me at moonbeamdaydream.com. And I'm sure that Mary will put it in her show notes. You can email me, freedom@moonbeamdaydream.com. And then I'm on Instagram at freedomcheverello, which I'll give it $1 if you can spell that right the first time. But I'm sure she'll put it in the show notes too. I would absolutely love to connect with you. There's a booking situation in my little link tree if you're curious about these one-on-ones. And I have classes on alchemy all the time. You pick up my mailing list, you'll get all the deets. Yeah. Reclaim your queendom, queens.
Yes. Reclaim your queendom. That is one.
Yes.
That is the process of what we're doing here. This isn't just about changing your relationship with alcohol. This is about changing your relationship with the self, with your life.
Yeah. With the feminine, with receiving, really. Yeah.
And
allowing and receiving.
Yes. Just a wealth of knowledge and just also really fun and funny, down to earth and practical.
Yeah.
I love
Queen.
Her. But adding the essential oils, and I just talked about essential oils in my yoga class the other day, and I got a queen that knows them, because it really has changed my, you know, so much of this is about ritual too, and about how we show up to sacredness that is our lives. And so this is just a part of changing the ritual in a way that is received by the body and welcomed by the body, so that you're fullest.
Yeah, it's quenching a thirst.
Yeah, I love
you know. That. Yeah,
freedom. Thank you so much,
Queen.
Here, and I am just thrilled to get your information out to our audience.
Oh my God, thank you.
Everyone needs this magic, especially in these times. We need real support.
That
can really, you know, can really support the body with immunity, with mental, physical, spiritual health in all the ways. And our mama Gaia has just already created it for us. So
yeah, it's all right there.
Have an amazing day. And I
will talk to
you soon.
Yes, Queen. I love you.
Love you.
The process of unraveling your story outside of the confines of alcohol is truly a sacred and beautiful journey of the self. Rediscover who you are in a whole new world again. Stop by my website, marywagstaffcoach.com, to get instant access to the on-demand workshop of my revolutionary 5 shifts approach. And while you're there, you can sign up for a one-on-one consultation where we will create together your life intention. This is the framework for which all of your decisions around alcohol are made from your truest and highest self. In addition to working remotely worldwide, I host private one-on-one healing retreats at my sanctuary in Mount Hood, Oregon. I can't wait to connect.